It's time for JT the Brick.
The Warriors advanced like I expected them to.
And for the fifth consecutive year, the Golden State Warriors will go to the Western Conference Finals.
The only thing that I said before, I'll say it again, is that the Warriors have already won the NBA title. And they did it without Boogie Cousins and without Kevin Durant. Because the Warriors are a dynasty, where the dynasty will be 4 in 5 years.
Curry behind the back twice, leans, fades, fires, it's up and good!
But most of the time, he makes these incredible plays, and he's just fearless.
Maybe the greatest dynasty of all time.
It's kind of weird saying prove a lot of people wrong, knowing what we've accomplished, but...
This Warrior team is on cruise control.
JT the Brick.
If you ever believe in the Warriors, tonight is the night.
A Clay trade!
They're going nowhere as long as that dynasty is together.
The one-time darlings are now a dynasty. The Golden State Warriors have won back-to-back NBA championships.
Because I'll stay consistent with what I said. That was the NBA Finals. It's over. I don't think that they have to worry about Milwaukee. I don't think they have to worry about Portland. If I'm wrong, you know where to find me. The Warriors have better talent, and they're just clutch. I've never seen anything like it.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back. JT with you. Big show. Eric Winalda will join us. The great American-born soccer player. Now, the manager, the head coach, the guy with the Las Vegas Lights FC. He's coming in studio here about 20 minutes. We'll talk to him. We'd like to take your calls on this. Gary Lawless was just here. If you're a soccer fan, a global soccer fan, if you're a Lights fan, get an opportunity to talk to really a legendary player, great American player, a captain for the national team, and really the face of the franchise now as soccer here in Vegas is growing by the day. We're brought to you by Golden Entertainment, the owners of the Strat. You can find us at the Boulevard in Maine. Right when you walk in, elevated pub cuisine, the great LED screens that are there, great sports bar, and it's right next door to the William Hill Sportsbook. If you haven't been there, go check out the all-new Strat from the artwork inside and outside. They completely redid the property. Check us out at Boulevard in Maine. I'm excited about the PGA Championship more than the NBA Eastern and Western Conference Finals, but I know you're not. So I'll keep it focused and I'll move it fast. This is a golf major that we lead with here at the top of the hour. And it was Brooks Koepka, who today shot 63, a course record, 7 under par at one of the toughest golf courses in America. Just a brutal course because it's long, it's intense, there, it's difficult. Bethpage Black is where I grew up. I grew up 5 miles away from the course, hung out there as a kid, didn't play golf there. There's a big warning sign. You've seen it. There's a warning sign on the first tee for only experienced golfers. They do not want you or me to play that golf course. No need to. They have other courses in this giant park where the British were and the American troops in the Revolutionary War. This unbelievable, long-standing piece of real estate now that has 5 public golf courses. So as you're watching the PGA Championship tomorrow or this week, remember, this is a public course. You can play any of the courses you want for a cheap price, but the Black, which is their featured course, is next to impossible, except for Brooks Koepka. He went out and shot a 63. He played with Tiger Woods and beat Tiger Woods by 9 strokes. It's impossible to even bring that up. Now, remember, as we reported yesterday, because it was reported while we were on the air, that Tiger Woods did not show up on the grounds yesterday to play 9 holes, to get a practice round, and the weather was great. Some people were alarmed by that, saying, why didn't he play? Why didn't Tiger go in there and get 9 holes in and loosen up and end up playing a couple of holes just to get loose? He didn't, and it showed today. Look, I'm not a big believer in time off. We just had Gary Lawless on talking about that with hockey and other sports. Tiger Woods played the Masters and won. One of the biggest wins of his career, right? After all the issues he's had. And then he hasn't played a round of golf, professional round, since today. There's no need for that. Look, I know he's suffered through injuries, but we're sensing he doesn't have one. And he should be able to play, and he was rusty today. And when you're rusty and you're trying to chase Brooks Koepka, good luck. So Koepka, 7 under. Danny Lee, 6 under. Tommy Fleetwood, 3 under. And then the leaderboard gets interesting with a couple of no-name guys you haven't heard of, like Mike Lorenzo Vera, who shot 2 under. The bigger names, Pat Perez, who is tied to Vegas. He's at the MGM Grand all the time. He hangs out there and gambles and drinks and has a lot of fun and goes to restaurants. Pat Perez is 2 under par. He's tied for 4th. Ricky Fowler at 1 under. I picked him to win. along with Dustin Johnson at 1-under. Jordan Spieth shot 69. He had a double bogey. He putted for a 7. He made the double bogey for a 6 on the 10th hole. The wheels were coming off. He put him back on again, and Phil Mickelson. Phil shot 1-under along with Jason Day. Good to see them playing well. So it's underway. Everybody is chasing Brooks Koepka. What I don't like about that is if unless you're in his family or you're his friend, most people are going to root for him to blow up. I don't like that in sports. I mentioned it the first hour. I don't mind hoping that a guy misses a 3 if I'm competing against him. But in golf, when you hope that guys hit the ball out of bounds or they lose their ball or they miss the putt, it's kind of lame. I play golf. I'm playing tomorrow. The guys I'm playing with, I'm not hoping that they have a bad drive so I beat them. I hope they hit a better drive than me. I want to have fun. And in golf, professionally, the only way that Brooks Koepka is going to lose this tournament is unless he has a couple of really bad holes over the next couple of days. If you want to talk about the PGA, give us a call, 876-1340. Also, I've been tweeting like a madman about this. Twitter, at JT the Brick. Last night, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who some people believe should be the MVP. I don't. I think that James Harden's the best player, the best scorer in the league. But Giannis did just enough, played decent, as Milwaukee won game one.
George Hill to the rim. No good. Picked up. Slam by Giannis. And again, the Bucks make it a 3-point game.
Toronto was leading for most of the game. I thought they were the better team. They were the better team the entire game, and then they just struggled. They struggled late. They opened the door for Brook Lopez, a 7-footer, who started knocking down threes. People were in shock, even in their home building.
Giannis blows it down the lane, passes out to Lopez, a 3, fires it, bang, go! 104-100, Splash Mountain delivers his 4th three-pointer of the game.
So that's the Bucks Radio Network on the call. So that's where we stand in that series. I'm fascinated by all this because Giannis, the Greek freak's going to stay in Milwaukee. He's under a long-term contract, and he seems to like it there. He's going to want to stay. See, we're living in a time in the NBA where everybody wants everybody to move to a big market. You can't stay in New Orleans like Zion. You can't stay in Portland like Damian Lillard. How dare you go play with the Jazz in Salt Lake or play in Charlotte? These teams need to survive. They need stars just like the Lakers need stars. But the Warriors have 5 all-stars. They have an unfair advantage. They made that advantage on their own. Give them credit. Because Boogie Cousins wanted to be there because he wants to chase a ring. Kevin Durant originally chased rings and left an Oklahoma City team that was built to win multiple championships with Russell Westbrook. He didn't like the chemistry with Westbrook, so he left. And then you look at teams like the Knicks, the number one media market. They can't get out of the way of themselves. The Celtics, 17 titles to the Lakers, 16. They've been waiting a while to win again. And then Philadelphia, the process. Philadelphia started losing on purpose. Losing on purpose to win a championship. Would you ever support that in any sport? Like if you're in Little League, I always talk and bring the show back to Little League. I've always said I should print the T-shirts. Some of the best people I ever met in my life were from Little League, and some of the worst people I ever met in my life were through Little League. I know there are moms and dads shaking their head now agreeing with me. And you would never lose like 2 years in a row in Little League so then you could win in the third year, right? You wouldn't do that. But we do that in the NBA. In the NBA, we suck for 2-3 years in a row on purpose. We don't let our best people play. We put them on the bench when they're healthy, so we hope we get ping pong balls. And then the ping pong balls do what? They help us win? New Orleans got Zion Williamson. They're not going to win with Zion Williamson. So they were a bad team. They had a 6% chance of winning the lottery. They did. They had Anthony Davis, who I think is a better player than Zion Williamson, and he wants out. So we're going to see the Warriors tonight, the team with the unfair advantage, but maybe they come back to the pack tonight. Kevin Durant is not close to returning. Not close. He's not going to play in this series, it looks like. So if the Warriors win tonight to go up to 2-0, I think they shut Durant down the remainder of this series. And C.J. McCollum, who's averaging almost 22 points a game on the road in the postseason, and Damian Lillard really have to have a big game. The line is Warriors minus 6.5. You can get it at 7 at William Hill. Jay Cornegay at the Superbook at the Westgate has it 6.5. How do you bet that game tonight, guys and gals? We have people betting, listening to the show Our audience would like to know how you're betting. 876-1340. Are you betting Portland on the money line tonight, knowing that they have to win this game? Because if they don't win this game, there's a boatload of trouble, and they're out of it. If they lose this game, they are completely out of it. And if the Warriors win this game, but they're a little bit fatigued, maybe, quite possibly, they won't cover the spread. And I talked to a really, really, really sharp player today. They're taking Portland in the first half. They think that the energy level of Portland in the first half, coming off the loss and what will happen to them if they lose, they love Portland in the first half of this game. That sounds pretty sharp to me. I think if Portland is down late in this game, they might get blown out. But I expect them to come out early. I think Terry Stotts, their head coach, has got to get the most out of them, and they'll play at a really high level. So that's where they stand. But remember, the Warriors have this unique advantage that we don't see in sports. They have a bunch of all-stars, and other all-stars want to go play with them. I'm a Knicks fan. We have nobody. We don't have all-stars. We don't get ping-pong balls. We didn't get Zion. We got no one, but you would think it's the number one media market, right? So everybody wants to go play in New York. Well, no, it's expensive. It really is not cost-effective. You're going to play on a bad team. In the Bay Area, people are now gravitating to a team. So the Warriors will come into this game tonight without Kevin Durant, without Boogie Cousins, and they're a 7-point favorite at home. They have an advantage that other teams are trying to figure out. And I want to tie that back up again to small market versus big market. What's supposed to balance this out in all sports, if the Cleveland Browns suck for 30 years, they deserve the number one pick. And what happens is they get the number one pick. And every once in a while, the number one pick's pretty good. But then he wants to leave when his contract's up because he doesn't want to live there, doesn't want to play there. With Zion Williamson, who played at Duke, from South Carolina, he seems to be interested in playing in New Orleans. But so was Anthony Davis. And Anthony Davis was healthy. One of the things that drive me nuts as a sports talk radio host is when a fit athlete in any sport doesn't want to play. You got to play. You're getting a salary. You're getting a paycheck. You're part of the sponsorship package. People are paying for season tickets. You have to pay, and you have to play. But we're seeing now in the NBA that guys are coming off injury. They're not 100%, so they're not going to play. That, to me, is ridiculous. Athletes from the beginning of time have been competing at 80%. There's nothing wrong at competing at 73%. But no, the value of the contract is too important. So Anthony Davis came back from his injury with New Orleans, was fit, ready to play. They decided to let him play. And then they said, we're only going to let you play the first half. Are you kidding me? And those fans had to put up with that. And now they get Zion Williamson to come in. And Anthony Davis. And people are saying to me, they say, JT, well, why can't they get Anthony Davis to play with Zion? He burnt the bridge. He already burnt the bridge. He wore a shirt to the last game that said, that's all, folks. He wants out. It doesn't matter if you bring in Zion or anybody else. He wants to go play with LeBron. And the last point on LeBron, this is a big moment for LeBron, because if LeBron can't convince this group of free agents, and he doesn't have to convince 20, just one or two, Kyrie Irving, who already played with, or Anthony Davis via trade to play with him, then the rest of the league's going to look around and go, LeBron, this is on you. You're in L.A., palm trees, the Lakers, Staples Center, sold out, and people don't want to play with you now? LeBron's got to get on the private jet with Jeannie Buss, and he's got to get on the jet and fly all over the country and meet and have lunch with Jimmy Butler, and then have lunch with Kemba Walker, and then fly over to and have a deal, sit down and do a deal, because Magic quit, Jeannie Buss, the Wolves are at the door, even diehard Laker fans from Westlake Village are all over Jeannie saying maybe she's not the answer. LeBron is the only guy that could figure this out. It's part of his job. Part of my job when I host this radio show every day is talk about the guest, talk about the prep, watch the game. I went to a seminar today where I had a chance to sit in on a seminar with other radio hosts talking about how you prep for the show. I look around, I go, how you prep for the show? You watch sports. I'm living in an era now where guys aren't even going to games and watching sports. They show up to prep for their show, and a guy gives them a piece of paper. Hey, this was what was on last night, and here's what you missed. Oh, hold on. Let me read this. What happened here? Well, it happened here in the fourth quarter, or Durant pulled his calf in this quarter, and then they try to fool you. All you got to do is watch sports and be able to talk about what's on your mind. Eric Winalda coming up next when we come back, courtesy of the Henderson Hyundai Superstore, Boulder Highway in Henderson. We'll talk about his great career as a player, now a coach, global expansion, what's happening from around the world, from the Premier League and my team, Tottenham, to the Bundesliga, to what's happening in La Liga, all the things I love to talk about, but most importantly, the lights and how this brand is growing right in front of us on the Las Vegas Sports Network.
For Immobile, Parolo, good position here now for Italy. They're going to get a corner out of that. Yes, they are. And we're heading for the final 20 seconds.
He's off again, kissing the ball.
A kiss of hope from Florenzi. If it's going to happen for Italy, it has to happen now. They can't bear to watch. Florenzi drives it in, flicked away by Kiese Tellin, and offside, and that's it! Delight for Sweden! Magnificent performance from Jan Andersen's team over two legs! They are going to Russia!
Bobby with some random World Cup sound from back in the day. Welcome back. I am thrilled to have Eric Winalda in studio. We go way back with my years at Fox Sports Radio, his time at Fox and Fox Sports One, the manager of the Las Vegas Lights FC. Thanks for coming in studio.
Nice. My pleasure. I was driving in, I was trying to figure out how long I've been listening to you, how long we've known each other.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And it's a couple decades, man.
Yeah, 2001 is when I made that, and I've been back in Vegas since 2009. You were here, and now you're back. First off, for you, your family, friends, how is it being here, the position you have, just living about town and going about every day?
You know, it's been really cool. I lived in Summerlin. I bought that house. Let's be honest. It was a tax haven because I was making money in Germany, and they told me they could only tax you once if you moved to a state with no state tax. So I thought it was just going to be a place where I had a home. And I ended up really loving it here. And this is you know, a while ago. But to come back and to see everybody and to have all that those friends already here, it's really been great. Because everybody's so welcoming. And people don't on the outside don't understand what Vegas is all about. It's a great town.
Now, growing up in Westlake Village as a kid and a great young soccer player, I want to ask you and start off, what was it like playing for your dad? What was that relationship like in the house and then on the practice field and then game days and those countless stories, those drives back home from a game where you had a great game or you might not have played well?
My dad was phenomenal. I lost him 2 years ago, and he was a pretty amazing human being. He was the captain of his football team. He broke records in track. He went to Princeton. He was a Rhodes Scholar, and the guy was just smart. He knew nothing about soccer. So when we got involved as kids, he really was the ultimate, because he let me figure it out. He never really was that overbearing parent that tried to do too much. I, one of the things I always remember, the story I always love to tell is, I get in the car and I would have acted up. I was a hyperactive kid. I was brash. I was causing problems. I'm getting red carded. I'm all over the place. And I'd get in the car and he'd say, ice cream or orange juice? And I would say, well, ice cream. And he goes, you're getting orange juice. And then it was my job to figure out what the hell I did that he didn't approve of. And it just was a great relationship, because he never, ever really was overbearing. It was one message. There's always somebody better than you out there. And if you want to get good at this, keep trying. Be a good person. Just and sports are a great way to learn about yourself. So I'm very appreciative of my dad.
He saw you as an athlete and a businessman and a broadcaster find tremendous success. How tough was it? What was the closure like when he passed away? What were those moments like at the end?
He had cancer, and he was, Dutch heritage, smoked a lot. Please, if you're out there and you smoke too much, please stop. It was terrible, but it was hard to watch him deteriorate, to the man that he was, and then to see him in his last days. But the great thing about my dad was, even at the end, he just was so proud and just sad that I'm sad that I'm going to miss what's about to happen, because it's always about tomorrow for him. It was always like that. So he was a great man.
When you're coaching, do you think about him often and his style?
That's amazing you say that. It's because it's all the time. It's all the time. And the way that my dad would handle especially adversity, and he would always say that to me. He said, people will never judge you when things are going great. They're going to judge you when things are going bad. And how can you conduct yourself? How can you, you know, be a leader and have a lot of people looking at you for answers? And, you can't lose it out there. You have to be a coach. You have to be a man about this. And so I'm very appreciative of all the lessons I learned from my dad.
Eric Winalda joins us in studio. We're really excited that the Las Vegas Lights FC put this together. So you go from being a youth soccer star, and then you have to make a decision about college, San Diego State. You come from a pretty competitive baseball community in that area.
Yeah.
And a lot of athletes. I just had a guest on earlier who's going into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame. Did you ever consider two or three sports where you're playing that, and why did you decide I'm all in on soccer?
Well, that's a great question, because so many parents today think that they got to dedicate themselves to one sport. That's not true. That's just a bunch of coaches in this industry now where they're trying to make money off you, especially in soccer. I'm proud of that. I played with Matt Franco, and he's the reason why I was in the outfield, because he was batting something, and I was batting two something. So I got kicked out of third base, but I loved baseball. It's on the TV over my shoulder right now. It's the Cardinals. That's where my parents grew up. So I still follow all sports, but I think it's a good message that it's okay to play several sports. I did think about it. I thought that there was a chance there, maybe, that I could have been a baseball player. And we have, Lieberthal came out of Westlake. You know, Yelich is the more recent guys, the Weaver brothers. But we've had great athletes come out of that area. And baseball was just—it's a big part of was a big part of my childhood. Now my son is 10. And I love watching him. I mean, the guys will tease me because they have apps now for that you can watch an under 11 baseball game live on an app, and you're watching your kid pitch or whatever. So it's a whole new world. But I still think that you learn so much from playing other sports, and all and baseball especially, because it's all about personal failure or success. I mean, you're up there alone. You're at bat. And you're going to fail, or you're going to, and so you have to learn to deal with failure. Soccer's different. It's a sport where you're allowed to express yourself a lot more. It's not about fundamentals all the time. So, you got to have that mix. You got to play at several sports. It teaches you a lot about yourself.
Eric Winalda in studio. So you get to San Diego State. How are you not distracted with La Jolla, PB? I lived there for 8 years, Mission Beach. Everything that's happening there, you're a well-recognized player on that team. You're playing at a national championship-type level. What was it like balancing college with soccer?
Well, back then I had to make the tough decision, and I ended up leaving school 2.5 years in to play in a World Cup in 1990. You're a kid, man. You got different priorities. I remember when Chuck Clegg, our coach, I had the recruiting trip, and I was all set to go to UCLA. It was done. And my dad was proud of that. He said, well, this is a Princeton guy. Never had a B in his life. And I told him, I think I'm going to go to San Diego State. He just looked at me and he said, Susan, and like get my mom in the room, like, because you fix this. And I went to the recruiting trip, and Chuck Clegg timed it perfectly. He had me arrive at a specific time at the front of the school at Monty's Grill, which is a bar, and then I had to walk a long 200-yard straightaway to the library. He said, "I'll meet you there at this specific time," and he had a player meet me there first, a guy named Brian Finnerty. And so we talked. I said, "Well, I'm going to go meet Chuck now." He said, "No, wait, just wait a couple seconds here," and then the bell rang, and then all these students and all these girls came out of the school and were walking out of the university, and it was my job to make it to the library. So I finally get to the library, and after my head's on a swivel of
all
those beautiful women that I just saw, and Chuck Clegg says, "All right, so this is the library. This is where you get your books. We're done here." And that was it. That was my recruiting trip. And it was perfect, because I walked back to my car, got in my truck, drove all the way back to Westlake, and told my dad, "I'm going to San Diego State, Dad."
Eric Winalda, I want to move on before we get to the lights and ask you about when you saw soccer on a global stage. You're growing up as a kid. My sons have posters on the wall, and they're looking at their heroes. If it's Kobe, whoever it is, a Yankee. You're thinking about playing globally at some point, right? Because you had to understand that the best soccer was being played overseas.
Right.
How did you come to grips knowing Westlake Village, San Diego State, and I got to get maybe out of this country and take my game to the next level?
It was a progression, because at San Diego State, it was really my coming out party in 1987. We were a ragtag team, but we went all the way to the national final, and we lost to Clemson. And that was the first time ESPN ever picked up the NC2A. So I had a really good tournament, and all of a sudden the soccer community knew who I was. And that was the first time I was recognized and had a chance to play for the national team. So the next 2 years, I spent going back and forth, traveling, helping the United States qualify for the 1990 World Cup. And once the World Cup was over, and it didn't go well for me, I got red carded in my first game on my birthday. It was a terrible day. But when I was exposed to that, just the passion, and in Italy against teams, and how good those guys were. And it was the first time I got to see what this really looks like. Half of us came home and said, that's it. That's the swan song. I got it to the World Cup. That was great. And then John Harkes and Tab Ramos and Marcelo Balboa and I basically said, no, I want more. And Marcelo went to Mexico. Tab went to Spain. John went to England, and I went to Germany. And that was where we really got exposed to a totally and completely different experience.
Eric Winalda's in studio. I want to get to, I'm fascinated, we've talked about this in the past, the hooliganism, the racial issues, when your mind was opened up when you were playing in Germany or Italy and you saw the fan factor and some of the atrocities with fans and the way they would behave outside a game or what they would say coming off a train station. You'd hear about a fight, you'd turn on your local news, the paper. Was that something you ever thought about as a kid, to see how passionate these fans were, where it was a war scene outside of a stadium where fans were going to fight before they even went in and watched the game?
They take it too far, and they still do.
Yeah.
The racial stuff was really, really opened my eyes, because as a kid, or maybe in your 20s, you see old video of stuff that has happened in our country, and I mean, you're kind of hoping that you're thinking that we're past that. And we're not, because it's still alive and well, unfortunately, all around the world. But I remember a couple of games as a kid named Anthony Yeboah and J.J. Okocha, and the fans were throwing bananas at him from the field. And I just was blown away by that. I said, that's the most disgusting thing I've ever seen. And I actually hugged Anthony on the field, because it was just, I didn't know what else to do. I just felt like, look, not everybody hates you. My mom used to say that. She used to say, when you're faced with classless people, all you can do is have class. And that stuff that happens, it has no business in the sport, and any sport. It's not just soccer. And the hooliganism is stuff that's scary, because that's people that take it way too far. And we want to try and figure out as whether it's FIFA or UEFA or any league to figure out how to just get rid of that stuff.
I have a 15-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 15-year-old. And the 15-year-old is now a Pogba fan. And my wife and I were in Paris, and we went to the Paris Saint-Germain store, and we got him a jersey and wanted to make sure it was right for him. And matter of fact, that store where we were at in October, they've had riots every Saturday right in front of it. And you're seeing this and how a soccer team can bring a community together and all of that. But now online, I'm showing him some of the great moments from Georgie Best to great moments with Pelé, to all the great moments that we've seen from players, Zidane, over the decades. And it's incredible, because you're a part of that. You played at a high level. Do you think kids now should spend some time, before we get to the lights, learning about the greatest players and teams of the last 50, 60 years, so they can get up to speed with what's happening globally, or just pick their local MLS team or follow the lights now and just find it through that youth element, find their player, that team in their community, and grow it that way?
Well, all of it. I mean, if you love the game, you love to watch it. I mean, it's the history of the sport. Of soccer, that is. I mean, it's no different than baseball. I mean, trying to explain to kids today how great Willie Mays was.
Great point.
And so they say, well, I really don't know, and that's okay. But the real players, the purists, they will always know. They will always have an appreciation for the sport that they play, and the people that have played it before them. I mean, I thought it was really cool. My son last week. He had all the people in the world that have changed through sport, have changed the way that we view things. And my son chose Johan Cruyff, because Johan Cruyff was the Dutch genius, and he went to Barcelona and changed the way that we play the game completely. And we still implement all of that stuff today. So if it's Pep Guardiola that we're talking about, as one of the best managers in the world, he learned everything about his trade from Johan Cruyff. So it's the same thing. Yeah, whether you're a coach or you're a player, celebrating the past is always a part of the future. You always learn a little bit from each guy, because in soccer, different than any other sport, everybody's different. If I say, who are your favorite five players, you'll name them off, and I guarantee that each one of them is very different from the next.
Absolutely.
And that's great, because it teaches personality, and kids get to be themselves when they play this game.
Eric Winalda, Las Vegas Lights FC. How did this deal come about? Because I discovered you as a broadcaster when you were coming on my show back then. We were talking about World Cups or big events. You're looking at this deal. The deal comes to you. You're looking at everything. You started off the interview talking about your relationship with your first home here. Mm-hmm. Was this something you wanted to do? Was this the best opportunity you had, or were there other options?
I think Las Vegas is a very special place for multiple reasons and levels. And it's a sports town that's finally getting to embrace sport. It's always been this taboo hanging over us, you know, that we couldn't really engage. But look what the Golden Knights have done. The Raiders are coming. This is going to be an unbelievable town. And it's always had that potential. So, you know, I've said this before, is why not be a part of the soccer movement? Because there's so many people that play the game. There's so much talent in this town. I would even argue that there's more talent, believe it or not, in Las Vegas than Los Angeles when it comes to the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds. They're just better, and I don't know how else to put that. So when Brent Lashbrook, our owner, and I started talking about it, I think he realized it did have a history here, but this town suits me, and I felt like there's a perfect fit. And you know, there's always that lingering idea that, oh, what are you trying to do here? Trying to, you know, earn your stripes so you can go on to bigger and better things? I don't really think that way. I love what I'm
but
doing right now.
But it's a fair question. It is. People are going to wonder.
I get it, but I want to do the best we can with what we have now and see how far we can take it, because I think Vegas is going to end up embracing the sport, going to have an unbelievable fan base, and we'll be in Major League Soccer real soon.
Eric Winalda, this is what fascinates me about this sport, because understanding the sport globally and trying to learn more about it, I see some of the crowds in Atlanta at the new stadium. Arthur Blank builds that football stadium for the Falcons. Wait a second. You see the size of those soccer crowds. Then I see Portland and Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, what D.C. United is drawing. Los Angeles with the new FC and the combination there. Right. And then I look at Vegas, and you just took it right from me with the Raiders and the Golden Knights. Is the facility, is the location right? Because fans are going to Cashman Field for baseball back in the day. When they get there, when you get them on that footprint, what is your job as the face of this organization to keep them coming back?
Well, look, the one thing you'll know, if you are a Lights fan and you've been to one of our games, you know one thing. We throw a party.
Absolutely.
That's first and foremost. And then actually a soccer game happens somewhere along the way. But the last year, if I'm being honest, I thought the team underperformed. And I think all the purists and all the people that really wanted to embrace the team had a hard time getting behind the team because the team didn't win enough. So my job is simple, is to put the best product on the field possible and to go find the undiscovered talent and put them in a spot where they can showcase themselves, and we can win and people can be proud of these guys. And our guys are pretty terrific. They get in the community. We have reading goals. We've got guys that are heading over to an event tonight for some kids that have, you know, all kinds of issues and disadvantage and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But they're going to be there helping them. And I love the heart that my players have. So when you pick players for this kind of deal, you not only got to find talent, you got to find the right people with the right character who care not just about their own team but their community. And That's probably the toughest job as a manager, managing all of that to make sure that people understand that, hey, soccer is in Vegas, it is real, and it feels like maybe a AAA deal. It's not. This is something that we're building into something bigger.
Eric Winalda, as we wrap it up, that's really important, because there have been other coaches in this studio that I've talked to for 20 years on and off, and when they leave, they get criticized because they didn't do enough. I don't like that about this community at times. We hear it. A UNLV basketball coach gets replaced. Well, he didn't do enough in the community. I'm saying, what are you talking about? I was there with him. I was working these events. That's an excuse. With you and your owner, especially, you were guys who were out in the community selling the sport, that have a passion for the sport, and I think more fans are going to come out more. And I look at all these events. I'm trying to learn about the U.S. Open Cup. Right. I want to know more about the level of soccer, and you were educating me on this tournament. Tell us about this tournament and the level of play.
So the U.S. Open Cup, Lamar Hunt Open Cup is what it's called, involves all teams from all levels. So you can have a pub team. And if you figure out a way and get organized and raise some money to play in the games, and you do qualify, you got a chance eventually to potentially play against the LA Galaxy or the LAFC or Seattle Sounders. So if you win enough games, You will get there. It's just it's the longest standing competition.
I didn't know this.
And
so
it's
you can
amazing.
Develop this team like a glorified club team
right.
and
so
get into this.
We did this. A lot of people made a big deal about last week because we beat Cal FC. Now, I started Cal FC with a gentleman named Michael Friedman, and it was because I was ticked off that I couldn't get the job I wanted. So I found a bunch of scrubs. I found a bunch of kids off the street. And we developed a team, and we qualified. We went through a 9-game qualification process, and they put us in the competition. We beat the 4th division champion, the 3rd division champion, the 2nd division champion, and then we went up to Portland to play against an MLS team. Now, nobody thought we had a chance in hell, right? We're the first team in the history of the competition, which is over 100 years now, to beat a top-flight team without going to penalty kicks. We win 1-0, and you thought the world was going to collapse, right? But and that's how cool this competition was. Now, the best part about it is my guys that played for me in that game, 2 of them went on to play for their country, El Salvador, and 9 of them became pros because of the opportunity that the competition provided for them.
Sounds like that's a big legacy play for you. You're really proud of that. That's like a big chapter in your life. I'm loving that you're sharing that.
But it's to me, I feel like there was a couple of turns in my life that if I would have gone the wrong direction or I didn't have my dad saying, hey, not a good idea, buddy. And some of these guys don't have that. Some of these guys don't even have a dad. Some of these guys come from broken homes or in the hood. I mean, they come out of places where it's the street. And they are very good at a sport, but they've never had the chance to actually have shoes and play in a league. And I've got 2 guys on my team right now that I don't know where they'd be if they weren't with me. And I met them 8 years ago, and they'll tell you that these guys have families now. They play a sport they love, they make money, and they're still doing what they love. And I take more pride in that than anything else.
Eric Winaldo, as we wrap it up, last one. You get this question probably more than any other question. When you look at players, where's the next American LeBron James? Where's the next great Durant, whatever the player is? And I've always been challenged by this question because just like you, I know they're here. I know I look at the television at Messi and Ronaldo and say, we got better, bigger, stronger guys. They were eating better food at 9, 10, and 11. They had nutritionists. They had better training facilities than some kids like Drogba, who was born on the Ivory Coast and didn't have shoes.
Right.
And then you hear in baseball, they had a fight to get off the island just to get out and then make it to the major leagues. And they're better than some of our kids who were 6'3 in Texas and had the best coaching. Where is the passion to keep players at the youth level and keep them through to 16, 17, 18, 19 and developing them into the next great American dynasty football club?
Yeah, I mean, if it's the next LeBron or the next big athlete, he's out there right now. We're not doing a good enough job of finding him, and our criteria sometimes, if they don't check the right boxes or they don't come from the right neighborhood or whatnot, sometimes we give up on people too fast, and that's probably the way it happens. Because I'll bet you there's probably 15, 20 kids that are playing basketball right now in New York City that could probably do it if they had a different
life. Isn't the answer money when we take these kids in basketball?
Yes.
They're in AAU, they're 14. Now we have all these issues in regards to corruption, and they're getting paid at the AAU level,
right,
and they're getting parked at a college. Shouldn't we find the best of the best high school or youth club players at 14 or 15 and just find a way to keep them here, pay them, give them everything they want, and put them into some type of Barcelona academy here in the States?
They're trying to do this right now. And in this country, we have called the developmental academies. And so they're being developed all over the place. It consolidates things. It complicates things to a certain extent. But the only issue that I have with it is they've eliminated high school soccer. So high school soccer is no longer a part of it. And I think that is a big mistake because for a couple reasons. When you play for your school, you play for your peers, and you play in front of a crowd. If you're playing at a manufactured game that you're just trying not to make a mistake, that personality doesn't come out. So you just produce a bunch. You're churning out a bunch of robots. So that's where we're getting it wrong. But where you do have players, this Christian Pulisic kid comes out of Hershey, Pennsylvania, and he's worth $73 million. And part of me is saying, damn, if he's worth 73, I'm worth at least 11 still.
Absolutely,
but
I love that.
Other part of it is that let's go find some more. And let's not blow it when we do find them. Let's not mess it up for them.
We have to pay youth athletes, and we're not used to that in this country. And I think with global soccer, when you talk about the biggest sport in the world by far,
we do it different than anywhere else in the world. We have our parents are paying to play. right? In the rest of the world, the club is provided for the players, and then they select the players on merit alone. And here's the best part. If somebody comes along and says, that kid's good, I want to make him a pro, that club gets compensated, sometimes millions of dollars, and they get that money to reinvest in the next one. We do it the complete opposite. And we don't believe in what's called solidarity payments or training compensation, which is a big legality in this country. It's a big legal war. Once we get past that, once we conquer that huge roadblock, this country is going to explode.
I would agree. And you're at the heart of it here in Vegas. Whatever I can do to help promote the lights, I'd love you to come in studio.
You're doing it now.
More.
You got your scarf
on. I got
on.
My
you look
scarf
great.
On. I'm feeling pretty good here, and I'm excited. Continue success.
Thanks,
because
man.
As a broadcaster, too, there's a lot of room for you, not only in this building that's got 7 or 8 radio stations, all the work you're doing, but the passion that you have for this sport to get more fans there. I know once they start showing up more, you're going to be satisfied to get more to come, and future success is going to be tremendous.
Well,
here.
Since
Thank
the Raiders
you.
Are coming, let's steal that one. Just win, baby.
I love it. That's how we do it. I'll ask Mark Davis if you can borrow it for a few games.
Good to see you again,
Great
Eric.
To see you.
Great
man. Seeing you. Eric Winalda in studio. We appreciate the lights for setting this up. When we come back, we'll tell you about the key to the Warriors tonight and what exactly Portland needs to do to just keep it manageable in the first half. I know what they got to do, because I don't want to see the Warriors sweep everybody. We'll get into that next on the Las Vegas Sports Network.
Drink up, the world's about to end.
Time now for the nightcap.
Well, last orders, please.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. So till next time.
Good night, everybody.
With a look ahead to tonight's action, here's JT the Brick.
Yes, and we got the Warriors and the Blazers. I'll tell you about that game momentarily, where Portland is 0-6 in the playoffs. In Oracle. So they can't win in that building. I'll tell you how they can. I want to thank Eric Winalda for coming in studio and for everything the Las Vegas Lights FC did to set that up. One other thing about Eric, who was a great broadcaster, great, not good, is that you see how natural he was if you listen to that. And he's the type of guy, he's well above his pay grade. He comes to this town and we see young UNLV coaches that you haven't heard of and you hope for the best. You hear about a high school football coach becoming a UNLV football coach. Can't support it more. Love that story. Going from high school and now everybody knows Tony Sanchez here in town. That guy who was just in studio is a rock star. To have him in town coaching the local soccer team, the professional team, and trying to get people out there and get behind what he's doing, it's important. Because, again, there are going to be coaches in this professional town. We got Gerard Gallant. We got John Gruden. To have Eric Winalda, that's a big-time name. There's a guy who's captained the United States team, the guy who's played at the World Cup level, who's played overseas, and he is grinding it, talking about this team all over town, coming into a radio station at 5:30, 5:20, and ready to sit down for a half hour to talk about it. I love that about him. He's really good. And go check him out. Go check out the tournaments that are underway. Go check out the lights and their schedule. I have a new magnet for my refrigerator, and we'll put that up there. I collect refrigerator magnets because it's for the garage. My wife won't let it be in the regular kitchen, of course. That's where the kids put up their grades or this or that, but I like this, and I like what they're doing. I like ownership, and I like the way they're trying to push the product out there and get out there. I've been to one game. I'm going to go to more, and I'm excited to get out there. So what do the Warriors need to do tonight? They need to do nothing but show up. They're in the head of Portland. Here's what Portland needs to do. They've got to hit physically Steph Curry. And follow me here. He's got to go down. Nothing violent. Not a clothesline. Bill Laimbeer's in this town. Does anybody know Bill Laimbeer and the Aces? Do you know what Bill Laimbeer used to do to Michael Jordan and Larry Bird? He used to physically harm them. He used to physically intimidate them. He'd say, yeah, we're the bad boy Pistons. We got badasses all over the place. We got Isaiah Thomas. We got Vinnie Johnson, the microwave. We got all these great players. But I'm Bill bleeping Laimbeer. If you come in the lane, I'm taking you down, and you're going down. He didn't get kicked out of games. He didn't get flagrant twos. They didn't go to the monitor. Oh, Bill Laimbeer just knocked down Michael Jordan. Oh, let's go to the monitor. The hell's going on out here? Here's what you do. Steph Curry starts floating around the lane with these lollipop layups. You come over with one of your seven bench players, and you run at him, and you foul him hard. You don't try to injure him. He's your brother. He's in the fraternity. He moves the needle. But do we all agree that this game is getting so bleeping soft that every moment is a three? Every second is a three. Everything is a kick-out three. Not going to beat the Warriors that way. You have to physically and emotionally intimidate them like it's a street fight. And we're not going to do it tonight. You know what we're going to do? Damian Lillard's going to come to the game in an Oakland Raiders jersey or an Oakland A's jersey. Is that intimidating? Right? You're laughing, Bobby. That's what he did the last game. Damian Lillard showed up with an Oakland A's jersey. Do you think that the Warriors, someone went into the Warriors locker room and said, hey, guys, well, I got bad news. Damian Lillard showed up with a Oakland A's jersey, our team, great. Does he want me to sign it? Oh, does he want to take a selfie? They got Draymond Green. They got badasses all over the Warriors. You know what Draymond Green would do if he was Portland and never won a ring? He would be taking someone out tonight. He would be running at them and fouling them. It's the only way you can beat Steph Curry. I'm not saying break his ankle. I'm not saying hurt him. I'm not saying throw an elbow to his mouth. I'm saying when he comes in for a layup, foul him hard. Do we even know what a hard foul is anymore? Do we even know? I mean, I grew up in an era of hard fouls, and now no one knows what a hard foul is. So that's the key to winning tonight. Knock Steph Curry on his ass the first 10 minutes and get the Warrior bench flustered to come in and retaliate. That'd be a cool idea because nothing else is going to work. Thanks to Eric Winalda in studio. Great guest today. Love the fact that we had Hunky Cooper, who's going into the Southern Nevada Sports Hall of Fame, and the incomparable Gary Lawless. I'll put that show up against anything. Why? Because it wasn't about me. It was about these great guests who added so much to the show. Head on out to PT's. I'm going for a cold one. There's 60 in the valley. Happy hour is now at PT's.